Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode number 72 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast. My name is Marty Becker. I am the owner and founder of Atlas Financial Strategies in St. Louis, Missouri, where we specialize in safe money retirement strategies. In today's episode, we're going to talk about how to avoid advisor fraud. Very important topic. So first, let's define what advisor fraud is, which is when a financial professional takes advantage of their client's trust for personal gain, whether that's unauthorized transactions, misrepresentation, or outright theft. So let's look at a few examples of just a simple Google search could find you. Here's the first one. SEC obtains $5 million judgment against ex-Morgan Stanley advisor. According to the SEC, Barry F. Connell, and this is all public record, so I'm not calling anybody out, while employed with Morgan Stanley, from about December 2015 through November 2016, misappropriated more than $5 million from investment advisory clients, primarily by moving funds between certain client accounts and issuing more than $2 million in wire transfers and checks from the accounts to third parties for his benefit in more than 100 unauthorized transactions. Connell, 54, allegedly directed the funds to cover his personal expenses and fund his lavish lifestyle, the complaint said. Here's another one. SEC bars former Don Bennett associate for role in a $20 million Ponzi scheme. Masho, I think is how you pronounce it, the SEC said, assisted Bennett in raising more than $20 million from at least 46 investors through the unregistered offering of DJ Bennett convertible and promissory notes by fraudulently misrepresenting and omitting material facts to investors regarding DJ Bennett's financial condition and operating performance, the risk associated with the investment, and the intended use of investor proceeds. Instead of using the investor's money as promised, the SEC said Masho colluded with Bennett in using the money to pay other investors in Ponzi-like payments and for Bennett's personal expenses. Next one, ex-Mass Mutual rep agrees to prison restitution for $2.25 million scheme. Minnesota broker and registered investment advisor Isaiah Goodman pleaded guilty to mail fraud in U.S. District Court and said he is willing to accept years in prison and make restitution for stealing more than $2.25 million from nearly two dozen clients to finance his lavish lifestyle. A couple more and I'll get to the point. James McDonald, a once prominent financial advisor and frequent CNBC commentator, has pleaded guilty to one count of securities fraud, a felony carrying a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. McDonald, 53 at the time, founded and led Hercules Investments, also ran a second advisory firm, Index Strategy Advisors, through which he orchestrated another fraudulent scheme. Beginning in mid-2019, he raised approximately $3.6 million from clients, promising to invest the funds in the market. Instead, he used less than half for trading. The rest was diverted for personal expenses, including high-end car purchases, rent, and credit card bills. Another one. A former Wells Fargo advisor admitted guilt to five counts of fraud tied to a scheme where he misappropriated over $3 million from five clients. Prosecutors assert that Welsh's scheme operated between July 2017 and March 2021. During this time, he allegedly deceived clients into signing blank forms under the guise of routine account maintenance. Welsh then reportedly used these forms to transfer funds into accounts controlled by his relatives. The diverted money, authorities allege, funded personal indulgences, including luxury purchases and gambling. And then let's not ever forget the pinnacle of all fraud when it comes to financial advisors, good old Bernie Madoff, who defrauded investors around $65 billion. So first of all, what did all these guys have in common? Number one, they were stealing that money to fund their own personal lifestyle. Okay, so I say that just to put out there, okay, don't be fooled by the fancy offices or the Mercedes or the Rolex, okay? Nothing wrong with having any of that stuff, but anybody can lease a Mercedes, okay? Anybody can make payments on a really nice watch. So don't see that and think that because they have that stuff, that they're somehow smarter than any other advisor out there. And again, there's nothing wrong with having that stuff, but just don't be fooled by it and think that, okay, just because they own this stuff, somehow they're going to give me better advice than someone else. The other thing that all of these guys had in common is that they were all, quote, fiduciaries. And I know that's a big buzzword. It was brought up a lot several years ago, and now I'm starting to hear that term a lot again. A fiduciary is just someone who gives you advice on your money, okay? And they're supposed to abide by certain standards, but there's no like fiduciary police out there. So we all have to abide by these rules. But what it comes down to, when people ask me, are you a fiduciary? What they're really trying to figure out is, am I going to rip them off at some point? Okay, just because you have the badge of a fiduciary doesn't mean you're not a scumbag. Okay, so if it's not the fancy office or the fancy car that tells you who you should work with, and it's not the little fiduciary badge on the website, what should you look for when picking an advisor? So when I started doing a little research on that topic, meaning basically I Googled it, here are the three things that popped up. When you're looking for a financial advisor, number one, verify their credentials using FINRA's broker check or SEC's advisor database. Number two, look for affiliation with reputable firms. And number three, interview multiple candidates. Ask about fees, investment philosophy, and experience. Okay, well, that all sounds great. But here's the problem, especially with the first two points here. By the time anything incriminating pops up on FINRA or the advisor database, the fraud's already been committed. So that's not going to give you any reliable information. Number two, all the examples that we just looked at, all those guys were with reputable firms like MassMutual and Morgan Stanley. And one of the guys was even a commentator on the most popular financial news station that's out there. So obviously being affiliated with reputable companies doesn't mean anything either. But I do think the third recommendation here is good. I do think you should interview multiple people. And like I tell all of my clients, talk to as many people as you feel you need to until you feel comfortable. Okay. And if you come across someone else that gives you the same recommendation that I did, well, at that point, it's just up to you who you would rather work with. Okay. I certainly want your business, but I'm not going to chase you around to get it. So at the end of the day, you really just need to go with your gut feeling on who you like dealing with. So if we can't rely on the industry verification websites, because any wrongdoing isn't going to show up on those websites until it's already been committed, and we can't rely on the reliability of the company they work for, because terrible people are going to do terrible things no matter where they work, what else can you do to protect yourself following once you do some interviews and get a good gut feeling? Are there other things you can do to protect yourself? And the answer is yes. And that's to be on the lookout for certain red flags. Number one, if an advisor is pushing you to sign a blank form, that's a red flag. Don't ever sign a blank form. There is never a reason to do it, ever. If the advisor is promising unrealistic high returns, that's a red flag. Now, the unusual thing in the case of Bernie Madoff is he wasn't promising unrealistically high returns. He was consistently performing between 8 to 12%, which is really good. But the fact that he never had any losses is what really sent up the red flags to the authorities. Another red flag. They start to become kind of vague or avoiding questions when you're asking about expenses or different transactions. And then the last one is they don't use a third-party custodian to hold your assets. There is no reason an advisor should ever hold on to your personal funds, ever. So a third-party custodian would be something like a Charles Schwab account, a Fidelity account, a Raymond James account, any of those Edward Jones account, any of those big brokerage clearinghouses out there that actually act as a custodian to hold your money. And then how do we stay vigilant once you are doing business with an advisor? So number one, you're going to want to regularly review account statements and transactions. And I don't mean the ones that show up in the mail every quarter. I mean like on your client portal that you can view balances and any transactions that may have occurred. That would be something if I were you, I would probably do once a week. I'm that type of guy. I look at my stuff almost every day, if not every other day. Okay. That's just a good habit to get into. You want to know what's going on. You always want to insist on written documentation for all decisions. Be very, very careful about giving what's called discretionary authority to your advisor. Basically, what that means is he can just move money around and buy and sell equities or other financial products without your written permission. He can just do it. That's how a lot of this stuff happens, is the advisor had discretionary authority to kind of do whatever he wants. You know, be wary of unsolicited advice or high-pressure sales tactics. I personally have never called a client and said, hey, we got this annuity doing this right now. No, they call me when they have a need for additional funding or looking for additional income. They always call me. I don't ever call them and solicit a product. That seems very unusual to me. Also, report suspicious activity, okay, to the proper regulatory body like the SEC or FINRA, okay? That's not necessarily going to get them in trouble. It's not going to get you in trouble. But if you have a concern, say something, okay? There may be a legitimate explanation to why an advisor is doing something the way he's doing. And if you don't like the answer that you got from them, okay, that's why these regulatory agencies exist. You can always reach out to them. That's not a problem. Now, how do you do this for annuity advisors? Because at least at the time of this recording, I'm not securities licensed. I probably will be at some point because I have a lot of clients asking me to do it. But how do you get the same verification when you're looking for an annuity advisor? You can always look up on the Department of Insurance website for your individual state that person is licensed and in good standing. Again, never, ever send the money directly to the advisor. There is never, ever a reason for that, ever. And if any advisor, regardless annuities or securities, ask you to send the money to them directly, run out of the office or hang up the phone. I don't know how else to say that. That is not a thing, ever. Make sure you're provided with copies of a full annuity illustration. I've had clients who have talked to other annuity advisors say, oh, this is what this guy was recommending, and they send me an email, and it's a scanned copy of two or three pages of the illustration. And it even says at the bottom, oh, this is page 3 of 19. Okay, where are the other 18 pages? You need a full illustration. You can also request copies of the disclosure statement, or sometimes known as the statement of understanding. This will always be in the application that you fill out for the annuity, but it's never a problem to get you a copy of those things before you get to the application process. You can always call the company that was recommended. Now, I will say, you know, you're going to talk to a customer service rep there, so they're going to be limited on what they can tell you because you're not a client of the company. You're not a customer yet, but they should at least be able to verify, does that product exist? Is it the rate that the advisor is telling me? And is this agent, advisor, in good standing with the company? You can ask for client recommendations. I personally use Trustpilot, where I'll have clients, if they're willing to do it, take a few minutes, just go online and type something up about their experience. And always, the older I get, the more I start to rely on this. Just go with your gut. You know, at the end of the day, the products out there are the products. And if you're dealing with a true annuity expert, as myself or a lot of other people out there, you're probably going to come across the same recommendation a couple times. So at the end of the day, it's really just going to be up to who you want to work with. So go with your gut. Totally fine. I never take offense to that. And then always have a good understanding of the annuity that you're considering. I don't mean becoming an annuity expert, okay? But like I mentioned earlier, get a copy of the disclosure statement. Get a copy of the brochure because that's normally easier to understand. But at least have a good working knowledge of any financial product that you're considering, whether it's stocks, ETFs, bonds, annuities, promissory notes, any of that kind of stuff, at least have a good working knowledge of it. And in today's environment, there really is no reason not to have a good working knowledge of it, because you can YouTube or Google pretty much anything and get a really good outline of how something is supposed to work. And speaking about having a good understanding of annuities, if you haven't watched my 20% More Spendable Income in Retirement video series, that is, in my opinion, one of the best ways to jump in with both feet and get a really good understanding of how annuities work and what is the most efficient way to use them. And once you have a chance to watch that video series and you're ready to get some questions answered, you can go to atlasannuity.com or click the schedule a call button in the top right corner of any page of my website and book a time, and we'll have a very short down-to-earth conversation and get any questions answered that you may have. And if you're liking this content, please do us a favor, because it helps us get more exposure. Subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and share it with someone that you think maybe could benefit from hearing the information. And as always, I want to thank you for joining me in the Atlas Annuity Podcast. This has been episode number 72. My name is Marty Becker, wishing you all the best in your financial education. We'll catch you in the next episode.